Hi, everybody. Welcome to Paul Lisnick Behind the Curtain, my opportunity to step away from the worlds of politics and law that you see me cover on television. And we go into a passionate world of theater and the arts here on Behind the Curtain. Of course, arguably, this show that we're going to talk about isn't all that far from the world of politics and maybe some law and maybe a little American history, because that's what it's all about. We're going to talk about the incredible, amazing, one of my top favorite shows of all time, Hamilton. And I get to talk to a guy. I know y'all think, oh, you can talk to Alexander Hamilton. Now, you know what? We can do that. I wanted the actor who plays Thomas Jefferson, also plays Marquis de Lafayette. We'll explain that to you. But I want you to say hi to Jared Howelton, because Jared, you are amazing in this show.
Oh, thank you, Paul, for having me. And I appreciate that. Thank you.
Do you ever slip, you know, Pierre, who plays Alexander Hamilton, do you ever slip him a 20 and see if you can get him to go on and say, my name is Alexander Howelton?
You know what? I'll do that tonight. I'll do that tonight for the show. I'll be like, you know what? Why don't you slip my name in there?
Think about that. That could be, audience won't catch it. They're going to kind of go, what did he say? How? They'll just think it's them.
Yeah, it'll go over their head. They won't know.
And Pierre gets $20 and you're a bigger star as a result. Come on.
He'll have a nice cocktail at the end of the show.
Exactly. So, you know, Jared, I always assume everybody knows Hamilton. I mean, I've seen it, I don't know how many times. And in fact, I'll show you this. I actually own, if this will kind of, my little green screen here, this was Lin-Manuel Miranda's original boot from
show.
Lin,
okay.
For me as well. He told me, do you have zippers in your boots now?
We do have zippers.
Yeah, you didn't when the show first opened on Broadway. And when I showed that to Lin, he says, oh my God, I hated those boots. We couldn't get them on. We added zippers to them.
Yeah. But,
come on and visit me. I've got part of the original Broadway floor that Lin signed for me. I got so much Hamilton stuff in Florida. It's really one of my favorite shows, as I said. But for those who just haven't seen the show, let me invite you to tell them a little bit about the story of Hamilton, what it's all about.
Yeah. Story of Hamilton. Alexander Hamilton, one of the lesser kind of known founding fathers, if you didn't know, you know, obviously outside of...
Just look at your $10 bills.
Yeah, except when you look at a $10 bill. But it's the story of America told then by the story of, you know, about people, what America looks like today, told by the story of people that look like what America looks like today. And I think that's what's really cool. You know, the whole story is about an immigrant that comes to America and really shocks the world and shocks the country and creates his own financial system that he puts into existence and that we still use to this day. In a way, a lot of people can recognize and see themselves on the stage. And that's really what's important, is the representation that the show brings. It's a show that has jazz, musical theater, you know, hip hop, R&B, as well as the dancing style of it. Really telling the story and the biography of Alexander Hamilton, told through people that are African American, Hispanic, come from different backgrounds, Jewish. The Jewish community, all BIPOC community, LGBTQIA community. So it's a really cool story told by so many different people that can be represented and can be recognized on stage that really didn't get an opportunity in the past in the Broadway community. So it's a really dope show.
And by the way, I interviewed Gail Papp, who is the widow of Joe Papp. And you probably know that's where Hamilton began, at the Public Theater, which Joe Papp started. So we got to talk a little bit about this and the headway it made. I'm sort of curious. I mean, I don't know. I have interviewed Lin as well, but the whole notion, and as far as I know, this is groundbreaking in terms of casting a variety of people, African American, whatever it is. It almost doesn't matter to what the role is. It's as though Lin and his folks were just casting the right person for the role. What message do you think when an audience comes in? Like, if you go see Hamilton now at the Nederlander Theater, you're going to see George Washington. Yes, our father of our country, George Washington, who I've seen originally played on Broadway by an African-American. Now it's being played by Asian-American. I mean, it's all so intermixed, but I love the message of it. What do you think the message of it is to an audience?
I think the message is just, you know, that theater, it should be for everyone, and that, you know, for the first time, you're going to see a lot of people, you know, I've been doing theater for about, you know, like 10 years professionally. And with Hamilton, I'm seeing a lot of other people that are coming to the theater that normally haven't come to the theater. And, you know, when I finish the show and I come out of the stage, there's just so many different people that come from all walks of life that are like, this is my first opportunity to be in the theater. And I've never known what musical theater or being inside of a theater felt like, but this show changed my life. And just seeing so many different people represented on stage was so powerful. And like you said, like, it doesn't really matter who, you know, who's in the role, it's who's right for the role. And you're absolutely right. We've gone from Chris Jackson to now Marcus Choi, who is playing George Washington with us here on the stage right now. And it's just as powerful and it's so meaningful. And so it touches a lot of people that come from different walks of life. And I think that's what's really special.
By the way, you've also played one of my favorite roles outside of Hamilton. I'm going to give you a little hint, see if you can figure out which one I'm talking about.
All right. Shrek, huh? Donkey, yes.
You were Donkey. Yes. And do you know who's playing down the street from you?
Who's playing right now?
Alan Mingo Jr. He was Donkey on the national tour. You Donkeys ought to get together.
Oh, we got to have a Donkey meeting.
Yeah, he's doing the Whiz down the street. But yeah, get to, and I, one of my early shows that I did for a Broadway Backstage show was the cast, Eric, and just all the folks who were on tour for Donkey. I just love that show. Let's not talk about Shrek, though. We'll do that some other time. Although it was Shrek. But anyway, so in this show, so you play Thomas Jefferson. I will go out on a limb and say, I think that Jefferson and Marquis de Lafayette, it's both, but let's put them together for a moment because I think you have one of the toughest roles in the show, if only from the number of words you have to say per second.
Yes, absolutely. Lots of words to keep in that little brain of mine. Yes. Very difficult.
Now, when you auditioned, I mean, because you're a standby for Hamilton, right? I mean, other roles in the show, yes?
So I started off, my journey was, I started off with the first Chicago company when it was here back in, you know, 2016 to 2020. And I started off as a swing covering the principals. And then I joined the Los Angeles company in that same position. And then after the pandemic and we all came back, I started to do small contracts as leave of absences for people. So I've covered multiple roles of Lawrence Phillip, Lafayette Jefferson included, Madison Mulligan, King George III, the Man 5 track, and Man 6. But for this company, I am the role of the Marquis de Lafayette and Thomas Jefferson this time around. So
by the way, that you worked with Miguel, you worked with Jose Ramos?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I worked with Miguel in New York. I worked with Miguel in Chicago first, and then I did it Miguel with him on Broadway. Jose, all of the good old OGs from Chicago.
Yeah, I think Jose, you got to call him Maxi Ramos now. It's kind of,
yes, I believe so.
Let's go with that. So with your role, first of all, some people are like, how does he play the Marquis de Lafayette and Thomas Jefferson? And the same is true of Jose Ramos when he was in the show, and how he was playing. There are several characters who get to play two roles, even Peggy Schuyler, right? How does that happen? How are you able to do that?
Yes. So my character, I played the Marquis de Lafayette in Act 1, and then we switched to Thomas Jefferson in Act 2. And yeah, it's two different shows for me, for sure. But in a way, they're both connected because, you know, the Marquis de Lafayette and Thomas Jefferson did actually in real life work together when Thomas Jefferson was overseas in France, helping Lafayette draft the Declaration for the French Revolution. So there is some kind of connection there character-wise, but again, two different acts. And honestly, I just give in to... and two different like vibes too. The first act is always, it's very fast and very pulsy and everything. And then that second act's a little bit more breathing room and everything like that because of the politics of it all. But yeah, it's very difficult, two different shows, but it's very cool to just like switch off for that and have that moment in intermission to take a deep breath, have a cup of water, do a couple of lip trills and get ready for another character and everything like that.
But is so there fun. Do you have to, in all the actors who are playing a couple of different roles, is there a mental shift for you? I mean, I know you're changing costumes and stuff, but there also has to be a moment of, all right, I'm not Marquis, now I'm Thomas Jefferson. I mean, they were very different people in real life, and you're an actor.
Absolutely, absolutely. A change in physique, in the body, a change in the voice. Definitely mentally, it is quick for sure, but I definitely have that moment of like before Act 2 starts and we do What Did I Miss? It's that click in the dark of just like taking that moment, taking a deep breath and just like, you know, embracing this new act of telling the story of the new opponent that Hamilton has to face in Act Two.
Do you, because you've been in the show so long, in the early days of seeing the show, there were lines in the show like immigrants, we get the job done, those kind of things, which would bring the house down. Now I think so many people, they just come back and back and back. We know the lines. We know the, in fact, Lynn once said to me, if he ever dropped a line, the audience said it for him. They knew his lines. Maybe I don't think you drop lines, but I'll bet you that would happen if you did. But out of curiosity, is there a consistency still in the reactions that you're getting? Was there larger reactions 4 years ago, or, and people know it more now? What kind of audience differences are you seeing?
Well, honestly, Paul, I think that so many people have seen Hamilton and that they're coming into the theater for the fourth and fifth time, that it's not about like that. It's less about them cheering about those moments anymore. But I think it's like them finally delving into so much more that's deeper than like the cheers and stuff like that. I think they're seeing some things that they've never seen before that they haven't seen, like moments in the dark that a lot of the actors are in, and seeing those points of view and stuff like that. And then when we go out into the stage where it's like, I've seen Hamilton, four times, but I've never seen this moment, or I've never seen this actor do it this way, or I've never seen somebody sing it this way. So yeah, there might be a little bit more, not as excitement with immigrants to get the job done, but I think there's a lot more focus in areas that for the people that have seen it the third and fourth time, they're like, oh, I haven't seen it that way, or I haven't thought of it that way.
Of course, the issues, again, the migrant issues here in Chicago, there are moments in time where things are sort of really front burner, like that is right now anyway. There's also been some changes, and I'm so glad I get to talk to you because you'll know the answer, I think, which is, having seen the show a billion times, there have been some changes over the course of time. And there's one that struck me, and it's funny because I talked to Chris Jones, the Tribune critic. We were at a party and I mentioned this to him, and he kind of went, oh yeah, that's right. It kind of hit him that this was a change. And I'm curious as to, he gave me an answer. I want to get your answer. When George Washington departs, I'm not ruining anything. If you haven't seen Hamilton by now, shame on you. But when Hamilton departs, up until this version of the show, he ascends the staircase, right? And exits. And this time he's not, he stays stage level and does the exit. I'm sort of curious. Jones gave me an answer and I'll share it with you, but are you familiar with why some of those, and apparently other changes were made as well? Do you know the reasoning behind that?
Yeah, not so much that change with George Washington, just because I don't cover that role or and everything. And I know that they have a lot of meetings with that. But I know that, but like you said, a lot of changes. A big change was the What Did I Miss number. And I think, honestly,
Can you tell us what the change was?
Yeah, so it's completely changed, choreography-wise. Okay. So, if you watch the Disney Plus version, you'll see what the original staging was for that number. But moving forward with all of the companies, the Philip Company and Broadway, it's completely re-choreographed. And a lot of that just stems from the COVID era and 2020 and the George Floyd killing, and just kind of rethinking some of these numbers and what story, what point of view that they're trying to get across to the audience. It's like, what do we want the audience to pick up from this number that we might have wanted them to do before the pandemic? We're just thinking differently now after that. And they just wanted to come back. And we had a lot of conversations over 2020 with the different companies. And we sat in with all the creatives, and Lynn was a part of it as well, of just like their reasoning behind it and their new vision of it. Cause it's so cool to see Hamilton. Hamilton was created kind of during the Obama era, if you think about it. And now through the Trump years, and now we're here in the Biden years. And so the show is still living and breathing. And what I love about Hamilton is that the creatives are so passionate still, and they're still involved in the show, and they still want the show to continue to breathe. And their ideas still pop. I know that Andy Blankenbuehler will come by and give notes, and then he has another idea and he'll incorporate it into the show. So I think a lot of these changes were just moments of when we were shut down and we had a lot of time to think and recalibrate and just come back to the show and just see what we can offer that is a new perspective that needed to be brought in. So,
I'll give you the Chris Jones answer, and it's right or wrong, because if not, I'm going to tell Chris to watch this and he'll catch the answer. Chris thought that the reason he said, because the swings are now national swings, meaning that a swing can be sent to any company in any city, mm-hmm. that they had to standardize everything. And so while that doesn't explain why a George Washington change happened or maybe a Thomas Jefferson change happened, but the point is if somebody has to step into the role as a swing and they're coming out of LA or wherever to do it, there's no time to say, here's what's different about this production. And so it was a way of standardizing everything. It sounded like a good explanation to me.
Oh, absolutely. That makes perfect sense too, just because like, you know, we've had over six different companies in America alone for a minute. And then of course, now that we're expanding overseas, that makes perfect sense. Cause you know, over time, since the beginning, since Hamilton started and all these companies started popping up, there would be a lot of minor differences. And yes, we had universal swings that would have to pop from LA to New York to some of the tours in America to the West End to Australia to Germany. And so, yes, there definitely needed to be some kind of consistency for the swings and understudies.
Yeah, you can't have a swing George Washington walking up the stairs and go, get down. There's
what you doing up there?
I'm supposed to be up there, George. Get down here.
Yeah.
Those changes are made. As you said, it might be Alex that makes them, you know, or Tommy or maybe Lynn. Is it a group thing or can anybody step or Andy? Can Andy come in and go, I'm changing the choreography because Andy Buechenmiller, I might be saying his name wrong, but he did the choreography. Can he come in and change? He's like, I've talked to Lynn. I've talked to everybody's talking.
Yeah, I believe that there is some sort of like meeting between the creatives of like the vision of like, this is what needs to be done. I know that, you know, with the choreography, I know when Andy works with the dancers and stuff like that, it'll definitely be like in the moment of like the movement of where the arms need to be placed or how, you know, the intention of the movement needs to be. Sure, that could be in the moment of things, minor changes like that. But major changes where you were talking about a George Washington thing like that or the choreography change and what did I miss? I think that that is a lot more, more of the creatives. But if it's minor cleanups that we need to do, like, you know, Alex Lacamoire will come in for a music cleanup or, you know, Tommy will come in and kind of give like a little, you know, a couple of blocking things and acting things in the scenes, stuff like that. That'll kind of be on their, within their department. But major changes that you brought up, absolutely. They all talk to each other and make sure that they're on one accord with that.
Yeah. And by the way, sometimes we'll anchor parts of our midday news and we had the actor, I'm drawing a blank, who she played the bullet and she's now engaged to Garrett, who plays MJ on Broadway. Is that ringing a bell for you, that little story in there?
Oh, wow. No, I didn't hear someone.
The actor playing MJ is marrying the bullet from Hamilton.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. Okay. All right.
You never get to play the bullet, dude.
No, that is not a track I get to play. No, unfortunately, as amazing as it is, but no.
Exactly. So when you take, again, this is historically based, but anybody who's read the Rod Chernow novel or knows history, I have a lot of background in history. Lynn took some liberties here, yes, with the history, and we get that it's part of the fun. But what kind of homework, if any, did the creatives expect of you guys? Like, did you go study Thomas Jefferson or did that not really matter anyway?
It depends on the actor. There's so many roads to getting to that level of performance. So I would say whatever the actor, however they like to prepare, how I will tell you at least how I prepared.
Yeah, well,
absolutely. Absolutely, I looked up these people. You know, they're real people. So, and their information is it's everywhere. So I definitely delved into all of these people, Marquis de Lafayette and his background, and where he came from and what brought him to America and why he was fighting this war that has nothing to do with him. And then, of course, Thomas Jefferson, delving into him, the good, the bad, and the horrific ugliness of Thomas Jefferson. And then coming into Lynn's world of Hamilton and then marrying those both, you know. So absolutely looking up where they are and who they are and then putting into what the world of the show is, you know, and what Tommy and Andy and Lack and Lynn created as well. So
yeah,
lots of homework.
When you think about the folks like your character and George Washington now being played by African Americans, when in the real history, those folks were slave owners.
Yeah.
I mean, again, I don't know that Lynn, I don't know that, that Lynn sat down and said, yes, that's exactly the point I'm trying to make. But the point is, it doesn't matter because the message is there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's, I mean, kind of like the hard truth that you have to do in your research is just like, staring at this truth and then also playing that truth on stage, you know, not shying away from the truth of what that is, as mm-hmm. well as that's the beauty of this show. It's beauty and it's also horrific at the same time, of just like knowing the greatness of what this man did while also knowing the ugly truth of what was happening during this time period as well. And I think it's just so powerful. I know you've seen the show, but once you see in the opening number, when you see everybody line up together at the top of the show and you just see all these faces that are about to tell you this story. And it's just so powerful. Like when I first saw the show on Broadway and just seeing all those faces up there, you know, Chris Jackson, David, Leslie Odom Jr., Ariana DeBose.
Look how they've all made it.
Yeah. Like you just see all of these people of color and people that come from different backgrounds. And it's so overwhelming to see them tell this story. And it's beautiful. So like, yeah, the research and just researching it, telling the story, telling the truth while also, you know, appreciating the beauty of the work that Lynn did. So it's all in there.
And you know, when you think of the path and it's, you know, this is the home of the Obamas and that's, so the Obamas made it clear when Lynn first performed a couple of the numbers at the White House.
Yes.
And the Obamas are like, you're writing a musical about who, about what? And
yeah.
They actually just got a kick out of it. They're kind of like, oh, sure, go ahead, do a number. Of course, as you know, it blew them away. And then when I think of that final performance of Lynn, where I was in the audience and I have Secretary John Kerry sitting behind me and Rosie O'Donnell's, Lynn's family was sitting right in front of me. I mean, it was just an amazing show and his final show. And I have to tell you, every time when he walked on from his first to the end, he is one humble guy. The audience, as you might guess, 18,000 standing ovations every time he said a word.
Right.
And you could see him look at the conductor and just go, go, go. He didn't want it. And at the end of the show, when it was time for his moment and his bow, they had to literally, Chris Jackson had to grab him out and make him take his bow. It's just not about him in his head.
No, it's not about him. It's about the story. And that's why I have so much respect for Lynn and as well as the rest of the creative team of like, it's making it about the storytelling. And that's why we have all these, that's why we get notes all the time, you know, and we have these rehearsals to make sure that we are coming from a place of authenticity and that you're seeing real people on the stage and nothing that is fake or something that is, you know, masked or anything like that. And
plus a lot of politicians could take a lesson from Hamilton. If you're going to have an affair, just fess up to it, write a brochure and make it public.
Right. Exactly.
And let your wife read it. And by the way, I got to tell you, I don't care. I could see this show. No, forget seeing it. I can't say the name because it'll start playing. You know what I'm talking about, that device. There's one behind me. But I could tell that device to play Quiet Uptown, and I break into tears every time I hear that song.
I mean, imagine standing in the middle of the number trying to do your job.
And imagine being Miguel Cervantes in the period of time. I don't know. You probably were with
him. I was there.
When they lost their child.
I was there.
How did you do that?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Miguel is a brother to me, we all sang at his daughter's celebration, and then, you know, of course, he was taking as much time as he needed before he came back. But after, it was on a Sunday, and we all had to go back and do the second show, or we had to do a matinee that day after singing there, and that was a tough Quiet Uptown, is what I'll say, as a company, yeah. Leaving that. So. It's a hard song to do, but it's needed because, you know, you see the growth of, at that moment, you see the growth of Eliza, and that the baton gets passed to Eliza for the rest of the show of what she does with her time and, you know, taking over.
Oh, and the love for that. I mean, I'm not wearing it right now. I got pairs of Hamilton socks and, you know, I mean, just, you know, listen, I don't know any other Broadway show that opened a store just for their stuff.
Right.
The store, right? Because everybody can't get enough of it. I even bought one of those blankets that is made by one of the original Virginia Wheels. I just can't get enough of it.
When I made my Broadway debut, my mother was all up in that store buying everything.
Then she went broke. Me too.
Yeah.
When you have people talk to you, I think you're back to being able to talk to people after the show, right? They can, I know New York is not doing a lot of stage door stuff anymore, but you do get to see people. I'm sort of curious. A lot of times young people, you know, they can go up to an actor because they just, here's this actor and they're really, they want to be an actor and all that. I think Hamilton is different about that because do you find that when you have, especially young people that want to talk to you afterwards, is it about Jared, the actor, but is it also about the history and the show and the power of the show itself, almost beyond the acting?
That part. Yeah. I think it's the powerful, you know, message and the story that it has. And yeah, we're attached to that. And we're like kind of a symbol for them because they can, maybe they see us in them, you know, as like, oh, I can grasp onto Jared Hamilton because I liked how he played the role and the show is just so great. Or I latch on to Deontay because his Burr is so amazing, or to Pierre because of his Hamilton. But yes, absolutely. The message and the powerful beauty and ugliness of this show and how, and the brilliance of it all is overwhelming. And to the, and that we're attached to it, that like when they come out, when we come out, it's kind of, an out of body experience. I feel like for them, because it's like, you go from the theater and like after the show ends and the final note has been played, they're just probably like, I mean, like I was when I first saw it, I'm just like, what do I do now?
When you first saw it, is that what led you to say, I want to audition for this show? What was that connection from when you first saw it?
Oh, yes. I mean, like during the show, I was about to call my agent and been like, Lisa, get me in tomorrow morning, you know, absolutely. I mean, from the first number, I was like, what is this show? And I need to be seen for it immediately. And so, yeah. And then, you know, of course, seeing, you know, and I'm not that type to be so starstruck. But after the show, when I saw it and seeing them come out of the stage door, it was like an out of body experience. And I was like,
you were a stage door guy?
No, that's the crazy thing is, no, I'm not. But Hamilton, after seeing it at the Rogers that time, it made me a stage door guy. I was like, I got to see these people. I got to see if they're real, because it just was so not real to me when I saw it. And so to see the people at the stage door, that's why I always try and sign when I can and take pictures when I can, and always try to give these kids some encouragement. Because
I've been, you need some props. That's what I need. I need more props.
I'll try and snag you a pamphlet, Paul.
I tried to get a lot. Oh, I got one. I've already
got one. Oh, you got a pamphlet?
Oh, please. Yes. I tried to get Eliza to give me one of them buckets at the end. When you know, I once asked an actor this question, and they were playing one of those, you know, really powerful, meaningful roles. And when I talked about what it's like to play that, and the answer kind of surprised me. It was sort of like, I'm an actor. I play a role. That's all it means to me. But I'm thinking, here you are, first of all, playing the beloved donkey at one point in your life, and now you're doing, you like that? And now you do Thomas Jefferies. My question is, do you say, and when I'm done with this, I'll go back to donkey if I need to, I don't care. Or do you look and say, no, that there are certain roles that just like are career changing, life changing, impactful on you, or is it all the same because you're an actor?
No. There are definitely those roles that mean a lot to me. And I understand that this show, I just knew when I first booked this show that it's a responsibility that you have as an actor with this show. It's a weight that you have to carry. And I humbly take that. I carry this role. Playing Lafayette Jefferson is a joy and I love playing it. And I see that it affects people. I see that every night. So I definitely hold that near and dear. And then, you know, like there's other, you know, shows that I've done in my past and other roles that I have done in my past that might have not have been as deep. But don't get me wrong. I'm going to give you my 100% and you're going to get a really good show for me, no matter what the role I do.
Even if you're in the role, I'm going to mess up his name, but his name is Thane Jaspersen or
Thane. Yeah, Thane. Yeah.
Thane, man, he's been doing the show since 1846 and he's never left the show. And I'm kind of wondering, after you're doing this, it's got to be 9 years, something like that, that he's doing it. Do you ever go out there and just go, I don't care about the bullet anymore? I mean, you know, I mean, you got to keep it going every night, no matter how many years you're doing. You're doing it years too.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, it's, people come, people go, and people come back. You know what I mean?
Nothing.
Nothing. But I think that, I mean, like, it was, that was one of the coolest things that I got to experience was just like, being on Broadway and seeing one OG still dancing the show and just seeing like, what is the original, like, not that the choreography has changed, but you know, people are over time and turnover happens and new people get cast and stuff like that. And so there's different, not interpretations, but like different ways that the body moves within the choreography. Yeah. But when you see somebody that has done it since the public, it's just like, whoa, it's so cool. And yeah, I think this show is just so good that there's always new things that you can find as an actor. It's so deep. The show is so deep. It's like reading a Dune book or a Lord of the Rings. There's so much more material you can grab.
And before you know the show, if you didn't know it and you read about, like, you said, oh, we need you to be the king. We want you. You might think, the king? Oh, kind of that little side role. Man, not in this show.
No, I have fun playing that.
And go back to Jonathan Groff and, you know, and
yeah.
I mean, oh my goodness, what that role is amazing.
Yeah. I remember covering that role back in the day, and I had a joy.
Oh, so you played it. You've been on stage as the king?
When I used to cover the role, I used to go on for the King George, yes. And it was so much fun. Yeah.
Oh, I love. Can you give us one line as King George?
I will kill your friends and family.
I love it. Well, Jared, it is so much fun to get to talk to you. We're going to have to wrap it up. You've got a show to do tonight, and you got to slip a tent. Give a slip of Hamilton to Pierre.
Yeah,
tell him to please go on and just say, my name is Alexander Howelton. And I promise you, I'll give him an extra 10 as well if he does it. Hamilton is playing at the Nederlander Theater. It's playing till January 28th. That's it. Right? You got a little extension. BroadwayInChicago.com is where you can get the tickets. You're fabulous. I'm so glad I asked for you, and I'm so glad you said yes. Thanks.
Paul, thank you for having me. Appreciate you.
All right. Happy holidays, and enjoy your last weeks in Hamilton here in Chicago.
All right. Thank you, Paul.